Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Hitler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Oh, Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
The deadline has passed, but that doesn't mean the deals won't continue to come in. They will filter through as long as those trade calls have been made, as long as the paperwork has been filed. Those deals can be processed here in the next little while by the National Hockey League. This is Canucks Central, and we await the presence of Jim Benning at the podium at Rogers Arena. The second he's doing that, you will hear from him here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Before that as well, and before I introduce my co-host here for Canucks Central, Adam Forsyth, he's been at the Black and Lee trade desk. What do we got?
It's going to be a very busy couple of minutes. We'll start off with a Robin Lehner trade. Chris Wohl just mentioned it. He is off to Vegas. Barclay Goodrow traded from the Sharks to the Tampa Bay Lightning, and a couple of no trades. Tyson Barrie is joining the Leafs on the team plane right now, so Tyson Barrie is not being traded, and the Zach Parise trade is not happening either. Lou Lamoriello addressing the media in 15 minutes.
Wow, big names that were supposed to be on the move that are not on the move, and we'll see what Lou Lamoriello has to say. We'll see how that deal didn't get done, or maybe he won't comment on it because it's a player not under contract with his team. Tyson Barrie, not on his way out of Toronto. They're going to leave that in place. We haven't seen anything filter in on the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are oddly quiet guys, and that really says something about either what they thought they were able to do and couldn't get done, or about the fact they are just going to suck this one up, ride it out. As Bick Nizar, Satyar Shah join me here on Canucks Central. First of all, let's talk about the deals that did get done and this one that affects the Pacific Division. This is a big one. Robin Lehner to Vegas. Vegas wins 6-5 last night in overtime, blew a 5-3 third period lead with their backup Malcolm Subban in net. He's not going there to displace Marc-Andre Fleury, but man, you want to talk about the rich getting richer.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things with Marc-Andre Fleury this season, he hasn't been bad, but he's just been human. And, you know, when Vegas was at their best, they play a really aggressive style of hockey. And when they're not getting those great saves from their goalie and the defensive structure hasn't been fantastic, you're putting a lot of pressure on your goaltender. And Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't been the Fleury we've seen the past couple of years. Lehner has legitimately been one of the top three or four goalies in the league this season. Getting him is absolutely massive.
Yeah, that's huge. And as we were just talking there, it keeps Fleury fresh. And we now know the return on the deal, because one of the issues was Malcolm Subban. You know, can they trust him down the stretch? Well, Malcolm Subban is, in fact, going the other way, as reported by Sportsnet's Chris Johnson. Again, this is a pretty big deal. And it just solidifies. If you couldn't get that D-man, how do you improve your overall goals getting conceded? They decided to go with goaltending instead. And actually, Chris is just changed the report. It's a second and a prospect in the package for Robin Lehner, not Malcolm Subban.
So here's the thing, too. When people talk about, will the Canucks, you know, should they go out and trade Jacob Markstrom, and Patrick Johnson put out that tweet about there's something to Markstrom missing practice today as well, and we'll see ultimately what that is. But people kept saying, hey, the Canucks, maybe you should sell high on the goaltender. All you're getting for goalies at the deadline is second-round picks and another prospect. And, hey, we all think second-round picks are good and decent prospects are fine, but goalies that are rentals at the deadline do not command first-round picks.
I'll tell you this. Sell high on Markstrom? I think you had to be high to try to sell Markstrom at the deadline. Let's not kid ourselves. He is a big reason this team's sitting third in the Pacific with a game in hand and opportunity to move over Edmonton when they play that game in hand based on the point disparity right now. They've got a good thing going with this group. You were actually considering trading Jacob Markstrom? I don't think for a second they thought that in the war room in Vancouver. I know why fans get worried about losing UFAs. Trade Chris Tanev. Listen, man, there is currency to getting in the playoffs with this group. A lot of currency. And what it does for their nucleus moving forward. Doesn't look like the Vancouver Canucks have done anything. We'll wait and see if a deal comes in. We will get you Jim Benning if and when he gets up to the podium down at Rogers Arena in the next few minutes. You're going to hear from him. I imagine we're going to hear a lot about prices being high today and the Canucks having already shot their shot last week.
The you know, like the interesting point there is, and we've talked about this, Scott, last week, it's are you prioritizing winning, right? This team has done just that. So as far as moving long-term pieces, as far as, you know, moving guys out, that are solutions here. Markstrom, solution here. Tanev, Stetcher, solutions here in the immediate. But they're all part of getting this next 20 games right. Let's see what happens in the playoffs moving forward. Their statement when they traded for Tyler Toffoli was, we're prioritizing winning, and that's a healthy thing.
He helped them win, obviously, on Saturday. Has, I don't know if you call it a breakout game, but certainly a nice game to get the monkey off his back as far as the goal scoring goes. He's up to 4 points now through his first couple of games. Looked even more comfortable on that line with Pettersson and Miller against the Boston Bruins, and now heads out for his first road trip with his new team.
Well, Toffoli's been such a great fit, and I love the way he's been able to play with Miller and with Pettersson, and you can really see his ability down low around the net. He's so good at finding those soft spots, especially with how well Pettersson and Miller both drive play. You add another guy that's really good at that aspect as well, and he's so good at playing off two guys when he doesn't have the puck, and you already see them through two games that chemistry is coming together. But as far as making a bigger deal, this was always what the Canucks were looking at. They went out and made their rental deal that potentially could be beyond the rental if they can sign Toffoli, who's already very happy in Vancouver, we might add, whatever that's worth, two games into his tenure here. But they weren't going to make any other deals unless they felt like whatever they give up that's significant would be a player who's a core player. And they were in on Barry a lot, and I think they were probably the team that came the closest to acquiring Tyson Barry, who was not being traded by the Leafs. And now those talks did intensify a lot yesterday. But a lot of moving parts, because Toronto wanted a top four defenseman, and Vancouver didn't have a top four defenseman to trade because they weren't going to move Tanev. So whatever you were giving them, they're hoping to flip or use in a different deal to bring that top four defenseman to replace Tyson Barry. So that became unlikely. And if Vancouver was going to trade, say, an Adam Gaudet, whose name was thrown out there, it was only going to be for a player who had term beyond this season and was still in that 25 to 26 year age range. They were not going to go out and make a deal giving up another significant asset for a rental. And as far as adding more depth, we've said the Canucks have enough depth. I mean, you have Zach MacEwen. Why do you have to go out and pay up price for Wayne Simmonds? Mm-hmm. Do you need to go and add a Tyler Ennis type for a fifth-round pick when you already have these forwards battling for spots in your bottom six? You are getting Besser back by the end of the season. So if the Canucks haven't made any other deals, and they may still make minor moves, we'll see if that happens. I think it's a good thing that they're not peddling away any more draft picks for rentals.
This one comes in, Andy in North Bend. Oh, boy. I think the West got a lot better today. Could end up making the Toffoli trade look worse. So obviously you think it looks bad right now, Andy. If we don't make a splash in the playoffs. Is it just about making the playoffs, or do the Canucks have to make a splash in the playoffs? And the concept that the West got a lot better. Do you agree with that?
That's the one I want to talk about. It's okay. So Edmonton made a couple of moves today. Calgary's made a couple of moves. Which one did either of them get significantly better? Like, I'm not a big Andreas Athanasiou guy. Tyler Ennis is like, okay, are you so concerned about Tyler Ennis?
Well, all that happens for Edmonton is they get marginally better for positions that they were using guys that were essentially not NHL players in. So you add a couple of players that do help you out a little bit. So you know what it does? It raises the floor for that team, and that's something that they've been looking to do as well, right?
So they raise minorly.
No, I know, but they raise their floor slightly. The team to be afraid of is Vegas.
Sure.
They get Martinez. Now they add Robin Leonard. I mean, it's also part of the best team in the division getting better and stronger, and still the one team that is solidifying itself. But Vegas, all of a sudden, I mean, what is the hole on their roster? Bottom third, you know, third pairing defense. That's pretty much the only hole they have now. I mean, having Robin Leonard, who legitimately has been a top five goalie in the league so far this season, is a massive add. The question is, how well would he fit in with that system? And will that adjustment period be short enough that they can still get the best out of him the rest of the season?
And really, how much are they going to count on him anyway? How many games are they going to ask Robin Leonard to play
down
the stretch?
It depends on how Fleury plays down the stretch, right?
And he's been much better lately. And listen, we know this very well here in Vancouver because of the situation Jacob Markstrom's been through. Let's not forget for a second, Marc-Andre Fleury lost his father earlier this year. That was a big deal. And nobody, probably including Marc-Andre Fleury, knows how much that has affected his play at various points of the season. It gives them a much better backup plan. It's not a piece like Alec Martinez that will be in the lineup day in, day out. But if they need to throw something else in there come playoff time, or if they just need to give Fleury a little more time off here down the stretch, I really like the ad. I think we're talking two different categories when we're talking about these teams upgrading. Mm-hmm. Edmonton, I like the moves. All of them make sense. Mike Green Some are higher on it than I am. I think it's fine. More on that in a second. Adam Forsythe.
We have a trade to announce. I think you're going to want to hear this.
Black and Lee Trade Desk, what do we got?
Carolina Hurricanes going all in after acquiring Sammy Vatanen. They've just acquired Brady Shea for a first-round pick.
Boom. Their first-round pick was on the table. Thank you very much, Adam. They go out and they get Sammy Vatanen. That was for, I believe, a second and a prospect. This is a first-rounder. They're beefing up that back end. Interesting move for the Rangers. The Rangers decide to keep Chris Kreider intact, keep him there, sign him to the long-term deal. Okay, if we make the playoffs or take a run at this year, that's great, but we've got Kreider under contract. Brady Shea is out. They get a first-round pick from the Carolina Hurricanes. I called them earlier in the program one of the most interesting teams in this entire landscape, and they have proven it again today. Talking about moving and shaking at the deadline, they pulled three significant trades today in Carolina.
And when you think about what they've given up, okay, it's really that pick because you gave up depth of players for Vincent Trocheck. That's a huge deal to not, you know, give away your peak prospects. Eric Hall is a nice player. Lucas Walmark's a nice player who I think is a bit underrated. But you get a guy who, like, there's your buy low option. This one is the big bet of getting a setting a first round pick. But yeah, that's a team that feels like they should be better. And you look at some of the metrics, they should be one of the Metro representatives because their goal differential is so strong. They you saw on Saturday, they can be overwhelming.
Toughest division in hockey.
Yeah.
Their problem is the climate they exist in.
Yes.
They play in the toughest division in hockey. And there's a division that very well may send and probably should send five teams to the playoffs. So you're not just battling for one of those top three spots. There's probably five spots up for grabs. Now, how does this all coalesce? That's really the question. It's not a question of the players they've acquired. Sammy Vatanen can play hockey. Brady Shea, we know what he's capable of, both in Saturday Night Live skits and, of course, on the ice for the Rangers. And Vincent Trocheck.
Yeah.
Underwhelming year. Last year, underwhelming to a certain extent. One that was marred by injury, but a guy who scored 30 goals two seasons ago. Defensively responsible as well. Really interesting moves in Carolina for a team that we believe has the chops to be a playoff team.
Yeah, especially when you consider, because they know what kind of who they are now, right?
And just so we're clear for everybody, Brady Shea is not a rental. Brady Shea is a guy who's under contract for 4 years after this one. Mm-hmm. And this is the type of move you have seen Carolina make in the past, that they will keep their back-end salary structure intact. We remember the quote from Todd Dundon, hey, as long as I'm here, we are never drafting a defenseman in the first round. We'll see if that actually plays out. But they go get another guy who's less than $6 million. Mm-hmm. And every time you go look at that blue line in Carolina, you go, man, they got all those guys and they don't cost them that much relative to what we think their reputations are.
No, exactly. And that's what one thing they look to do a lot is, hey, we just try to look to find value. And the reason they don't want to draft any more defensemen, I think part of it was they already had guys like Jake Bean, Hayden Fleury, and some young guys coming up, and they kind of felt like, well, we're not quite sure if these guys are going to be players anyways. Let's not spend our capital on more defensemen. But now at this point, you look at the situation they're in, and you have some extra picks, you have some extra capital, and Brady Shea fits in beyond this season too. It's not just a pure rental. Now, Shea is a bit of a flawed defenseman,
yes.
So I kind of wonder how he's going to fit in on that team.
I'm curious if they're looking at it as we're not getting enough out of Jake Gardiner.
Yeah.
Does this guy fill in for that void, and do you look to do a Gardner thing down the road? I know he's got a modified no trade, but they haven't necessarily got the return they expected from Jake Gardiner either.
This is fun, man. It's NHL trade deadline day. As they come in, Adam Forsythe will break them at the trade desk. We await Jim Benning at the podium at Rogers Arena as well. Let's get back to that Pacific Division conversation. I like what Edmonton did today. I'm a little surprised I haven't seen something come in for the forward group of the Calgary Flames. They've been looking at that right wing position all year, wanting to bolster it. Again, something may come in here with Brad Treliving's group, but instead he decided to go the other way, decided to get a couple of bodies on the back end. Relative to Edmonton, Calgary, and Arizona, let's say the Canucks haven't done anything else. Where do you see the Canucks in that mix? Let's leave Vegas aside for a second. I think most people believe Vegas is the best team in this division, and ultimately that will bear out. What about relative to the other three teams? Where do we see Vancouver relative to them?
Number two for me.
I think Vancouver is pretty much right there with a tie with Edmonton. That's kind of how I see the Canucks right now. And overall, I think Vancouver has a better roster than Edmonton does. But that high-end talent, look at Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. When they're at their absolute peak, no two forwards in the league this season are playing at their level. So overall, they're tied. The high end goes to Edmonton. But where Vancouver has an advantage is in goaltending. And as good as Edmonton's goaltending has been, it comes down to Jacob Markstrom arguably being the best goalie in the league so far this season. Now, we did see Patrick Johnson tweet out that Marky not being in practice, there's something to it. Potentially could be a minor injury he's dealing with. But we'll hear more from Jim Benning, of course. I mean, everybody's on high alert. So as soon as you hear something small on, hey, there might be something to a guy being out. So we'll find out.
We have another trade to announce over there, Adam Forsyth.
Not a trade, but a signing. The Maple Leafs have just signed Jake Muzzin to a four-year extension. It'll pay an average of $5.6 million a year. So Jake Muzzin, four-year extension with the Maple Leafs.
No surprise that deal gets done. We've heard that for quite some time. Satyar Shah is grimacing, doesn't like the AAV on that. I will tell you this, whether you like the money or not, that's the kind of player they need more of in Toronto.
Yes.
They need more guys like that that take care of details, play big in tough moments, and have a playoff pedigree to them. You might not like the age as much, but they need more guys that do those sorts of things. That has been the issue with the Leafs the entire time, has it not?
I'm curious why you're wincing.
I like Jake Muzzin. The only thing with Muzzin is his speed isn't great. Just that AAV over a long period of time, I think that contract can be pretty onerous in a few years. In the short term, it helps you, but it just shows you where Toronto's at in their cycle. They're all in. They cannot afford to lose Jake Muzzin at the end of the season because they're not keeping Tyson Barrie. We all know this. They couldn't trade him, but they're not going to be paying Barrie what he wants. It's not a great fit. So I think they're idea was, this is my opinion, that before the season began, they would make the deal for Tyson Barrie, and he'd be such a good fit that they keep him long-term, that if they lose Muzzin, it's fine, at least we have this guy, we have more young guys coming up. I think the fact they went to Muzzin and signed him to this deal tells you a lot about what happened with Tyson Barrie, because Barrie is younger and would probably project better for the next 4 or 5 years, just as far as value for the dollar. But, you know, Jake Muzzin right now is obviously the better defenseman.
I'd be mildly concerned for paying this much money for a guy who you aren't really expecting to give anything on your power play. That's a ton of money. Because we're kind of at a stage in the NHL where if you're paying for elite penalty killers, you're not really paying for much. You can make up the difference on penalty kill than you can on power play. And if you're giving up this type of money, I would look at it and say, I hope he's playing power play. And he's not going to get that amount of time to warrant that kind of value in that deal.
We'll see how it plays out. As said, they don't have enough guys who do things like Jake Muzzin does. Whether you have to pay that much money to keep it, we can debate that and how that works into a salary cap. 5.6 a couple years from now when we expect some sort of boost in the salary cap, that will be part of the discussion. Jim Benning,
just as far as the Markstrom stuff goes, and I'm still working on finding out exactly what's going on, as of now, it seems like it's a minor injury thing as opposed to something bigger and greater to be worried about.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I didn't think it was anything to do with some sort of trade. There's no chance the Canucks were shipping him out after going in last week and getting Tyler Toffoli for a playoff push. It just isn't congruent with what they're trying to do here. We will debate where they're at in the Pacific Division. I want to talk about what you said, the Canucks goaltending being better than the Oilers, which is interesting when you consider how good Mike Smith has been in the playoffs. And Jim Benning, as mentioned, live from the podium as soon as he is stepping up to the mic. We will get that next on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. That's a magic number.
Still waiting for Jim Benning to step to the podium. This is Canucks Central, and you're home of the Canucks Sportsnet 650. Turns out the Canucks have made a trade, and with that, we head to Adam Forsyth, who is at the Black and Lee trade desk. What is it?
The Canucks adding a goalie, acquiring Louis Domingue from the New Jersey Devils. No word on the return yet, but Louis Domingue heading to Vancouver. And a quick update, too. I mentioned Barkley Goodrow had been traded from San Jose to Tampa Bay. The return, a first-round pick.
Wow. First-round pick for Barkley Goodrow. He has term left on his deal, does he not? I will have to check, but I believe Gaudreau had term left on his deal down in San Jose, that he was not simply a deadline ad. Yeah, he's under contract this year and next year for less than $1 million 26 years old, certainly adds some sandpaper to that lineup as well. But Tampa willing to spend a first-round pick, which will obviously be a late first-round pick, to acquire him. And we saw this with the deal that Tampa made with Blake Coleman as well, that they are willing to pay for salary cap flexibility given what they have salary-wise at the top end of their roster. As I reintroduce Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar, let's forget about Tampa Bay for a second. Oh, back. Sorry, guys. Got to cut you off. Adam has a trade update again.
Yeah, sorry. I think Bick was probably just going to jump in and say it's not a trade, but Patrick Johnson has just published an article reporting that Jacob Markstrom is a torn meniscus.
Yeah, potentially a torn meniscus, a knee injury. Now, from what I've heard, they don't think it's something that's going to keep him out long term, but we'll see here when we hear from Jim Benning as well that there is a knee injury for Jacob Markstrom. Some think it's just a minor little tear, but obviously, you know, we've heard this before. Small little injury, it's not a big deal, then it extends beyond just a few days.
And not to go doctor on you as we sit here today, but meniscus can mean a lot of different things. That can mean maybe it heals on its own, could mean go in, do a quick scope, clean it up, and within 2 weeks you're back, ready to go, and you can be playing again. Sometimes with meniscus, it can be 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to scare anybody out there, but there is a wide range when it comes to meniscal injuries in your knee. And we will get the update from Jim Benning when he steps to the podium. Obviously, this is an insurance policy. No idea at this point what Vancouver gave up to get Louis Domingue, but they did not want to be in a situation if we got a guy out here in Vancouver for a couple of weeks even, where it's going to be Thatcher Demko and Mikey DiPietro.
And it appears to be a minor deal. Louis Domingue was on waivers 4 days ago.
He's down in the minors right now. He's making $1.15 million, so it's not going to be a big addition,
no.
Of course. Look at his numbers the past couple of years. Has not been good in the National Hockey
League. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's just an AHL roster player going back the other way. So.
Yeah.
I'll jump in there, boys. Sorry, it is Zane McIntyre, the minor league goalie.
So Zane McIntyre for Louis Domingue.
Yes.
Yeah. And the reason that deal gets done by New Jersey, you simply save a couple $100,000 mm-hmm. compared to what you're paying Zane McIntyre.
Last time we saw Zane McIntyre in the preseason, it wasn't going particularly well for him when he was backstopping the Vancouver Canucks. I believe he was part of that game down in Salt Lake, was he not?
Yes, he was.
Scott Rintoul, Satyar Shah, Bick Nizar, this is your home of the Canucks. They make a minor deal, flip minor league goaltenders, but Louis Domingue may be more important in the very near future than you would think. And we'll wait and see what this knee injury is for Jacob Markstrom, how serious it looks to be. But this is an insurance policy in net. And Sat, I don't know if this changes at all the way you feel about the Canucks goaltending situation relative to the Edmonton Oilers. But
well, of course it does. I mean, if Jacob Markstrom is not fully healthy and is dealing with a knee injury that can't really improve considerably before the playoffs come around, then it's a massive issue. I mean, Jacob Markstrom has been one of the best goalies in the league, arguably the best goalie in the league so far this season. So even if he has, say, a 10% drop-off, 15% drop-off, or, you know, goodness forbid, he misses an extended period of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a tough spot.
I mean, we were doing the game the other day of just trying to figure out, okay, how many games in that stretch will Jacob Markstrom play in March when we know there's 16 games in 31 days? How many is Thatcher Demko going to get? And you kind of came up with back-to-back. You got to rely on your guy. And now suddenly, does Thatcher Demko get 6, 7? How many is he going to get? And again, we're waiting on the full report of Jacob Markstrom. Jim Benning going to talk in minutes, and we'll get an update on his status moving forward.
What Patrick Johnson put out in his story that is available online right now, and it's a very brief one, here's the line. Sources report that the Canucks star goalie underwent an MRI in Montreal on Monday and is out an indeterminate amount of time. I will circle back to this until we learn more information. You can play through some meniscus problems. Mm-hmm. If that's what it is, if this is a meniscus problem, there are plenty of guys who say, I will play through it, I will deal with it on the flip side. Or there's something that just may need to be cleaned up, and it's pretty minor. The backdrop for all of this is you've got a guy who's come into his own in the last year and a half and is on the verge of a better contract. And as an individual, how do you view that when you've got a payday of some significance? We can argue what that significance is, but Markstrom's got a payday coming up, and he's got some term coming up. And whether it's with Vancouver or with somebody else, how much does he protect that with the obligation that you know he feels to his team? This is a guy who is extremely close with those players in that locker room. He is part of the pulse of this team, And you know he wants nothing more than to backstop this team into the playoffs and hopefully on a decent playoff run this year.
Well, of course, right? And, you know, if we see Jacob Markstrom, even let's say that this injury, he comes back in a week or so and it's not long term, how close to 100% is he going to be? And what is the percentage of Jacob Markstrom as a whole that you need for you to keep your head above water?
Well, we've talked about what the team just needs to do in general to hold their head above water. It's play 500, right? And I'm not saying that's a standard and that's what they should aspire to, but if you go 500 from some time now, you get to, what is it, 93, 94 points, somewhere around there, and that's going to get you in the playoffs. And I hate using the word good enough because it means you should be aspiring to more, but that gets you to that bar that you need to achieve.
And the way we look at the playoff picture in the West now, I do think changes a little bit. If Vegas gets on the run that we think they're capable of, and what are they run? Six in a row now? Beat Anaheim last night, 6-5 in overtime, held on thanks to blowing a 5-3 third period lead. If Vegas ascends to the top of this division and stays there, now we're talking about a premium placed on spots 2 and 3. We know how strong the Central is. You land in spot 2 or spot 3, you're Vancouver, you're Edmonton, you're Calgary, maybe you're Arizona. You go, I like our chances. Mm-hmm. And both teams will feel the exact same way. You know what? I like our chances against those guys over a 7-game set. You land in a wild card spot and you're hitting St. Louis or Dallas or Colorado, you probably don't like your chances. I know anything can happen in the playoffs and there are no favorites and we saw it all play out last season. But the context feels entirely different, especially when you consider a couple of rosters that are in this mix that really don't have a lot of playoff experience to fall back on, most notably Edmonton.
Yeah, I mean, you look at a team like Edmonton, I mean, you've made the playoffs once in 13 years. There is not a ton of experience. And part of the issue with Edmonton, too, is you got to convince Connor McDavid that, hey, you got a chance. Yeah. And you can't just punt on a season and say, hey, you know what? You guys have battled all year. You've had injuries. The roster's been imperfect. Yet you're sitting there within striking distance of being first in division, and we're not going to do anything for you at the deadline. That was a non-starter.
What's also fascinating about what Scott was talking about of slipping to a wild card spot, yeah. Right? Sat, what have you talked about is when the Canucks play structurally sound teams, they have had some issues. Who are some really structurally sound teams? Dallas, St. Louis, mm-hmm. two potential juggernauts on that side of the bracket. So if they slip into that wild card spot, wild card two, well, then they're going up against St. Louis. Does Dallas chase down the Blues, right? You're going to have to go against some pretty strong defensive teams. Vancouver versus Edmonton, different story. You could win that round. Vancouver versus Arizona, Calgary, somewhere in that 2-3 Pacific seed, they could win one of those matchups.
You feel decent about it anyway. You like mm-hmm. your chances as much as the other team likes its chances as well. I do want to mention a team we just sort of threw in there in and around the Western Conference. Are we surprised Colorado did not do more today? Colorado had a ton of cap space, dealing with some injuries right now, most notably Mikko Rantanen out of the lineup. They are right there with St. Louis and Dallas as far as contending for a Central Division title. We can debate what that means, winning divisions anymore relative to what it used to, but are we surprised they didn't use some of that cap space, use some of their currency, and go out and bring in a bigger name?
Well, I thought for sure that they were going to be more active, and I did find it interesting, and I agreed with you when you had Adrian Dater on last week, and Dater kind of mentioned, you know, yeah, I don't know if they feel like this is the year they want to go out and spend a lot of assets. You and I know your reaction was, are you sure? And then mine listening was like, what? Are you sure? I mean, maybe he was onto something because they've been relatively quiet. Or maybe they feel pretty good about the news about they will get Kadri back before the playoffs. They will get Rantanen back as well. I mean, Burakovsky's been such a good fit. If they feel like they're going to get healthy and they have enough guys around, then maybe that's fine, but I am surprised that they did not go out to make a significant addition considering the opportunity in the West as well for them.
Yeah, and look, they're a team that's so exciting, but do you keep planting the seeds for the future? That's what I just look at when it comes to that team. Because strong bones of what's being built for them.
Little minor update, Malcolm Subban is part of that deal from Vegas to Chicago, so he is headed to the Chicago organization. They won't be keeping him around in Vegas as Robin Lehner makes his way there. On the subject of goaltending, we're all waiting to hear from Jim Benning, and we're all waiting to hear more about the potential severity of Jacob Markstrom's injury. If you are just joining us, the Canucks, the only deal we believe that they've made outside of the Toffoli deal a week ago is to go swap what would be minor league goaltenders, Zane MacIntyre for Louis Domingue, but Louis Domingue could be part of the near future if Jacob Markstrom is out of the lineup. And look, we're hearing it's a potential knee injury. Some people are speculating meniscus. We'll wait and hear from the general manager. You do start to deconstruct and say, okay, where could this have been? Kevin Fiala running into Jacob Markstrom in that game against Minnesota on Wednesday night is one that jumps out, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure, and especially in the manner in which, and again, you don't want to leap to too many conclusions here, but the manner in which Jacob Markstrom falls back, is there strain on the knee in that moment? You know, he comes back the next game, looked well enough. Again, it leads me to think that perhaps in a, you know, not an official report, just it leads me to think that it's not as severe as we might want to run down the potential conclusions.
So when it comes to Markey, and listen, this time of year right now, we're talking to a number of different people and different sources. I got confirmation it is a meniscus. We'll hear from Jim Benning as well, and that is a knee injury. But to the point you made, Scotty, it's not just necessarily a long-term thing. This could be something he can play through. The other question really comes down to how willing is Markstrom to play through it? How much does he want to risk his injury? He is a free agent at the end of the season, doesn't have a contract extension in place. So it could be relatively minor, and he could be fine to play in a week or so, but how comfortable would Jacob Markstrom be to put his knee on the line, essentially, not having a contract beyond the season? So these are things that have to get navigated here.
Markey just lost a lot of leverage. His agent must be sweating. Should have played ball with the team a month ago. Watch Demko come in and make Markstrom expendable. That's from Flip. No, I don't think so. I don't think you can make the leap right now that Markstrom lost a lot of leverage. You just mentioned it, Sat. I'll mention it again. You can play through meniscus injuries depending on how severe they are. And some of it comes down to the willingness. And that's why the backdrop here is so important. When you are on the verge of some term and a little bit more security and money, what do you do as an individual athlete? Do you say, I'll suck it up right now. If I need to have a procedure, I'll take care of it after the season. Or do you say, this is only going to be a couple of weeks. Let's get it cleaned up. Let's get me right for the stretch drive. That's where I'm going to do the best work I have for this team anyway, which will lead to me getting that term and lead to me getting that money.
And besides, he's established a baseline for what his price point is because he's a UFA. Because if he was restricted, okay, I can kind of see where the texture is going, Flip. But because he's a UFA, he's going to go to market. He's established a price point. If somebody really wants him, if there's goalie changeover in the offseason, he will get that money. And so the Canucks are basically negotiating against the rest of the field here. They're not negotiating exclusively with Jacob Markstrom.
No, and I do think ultimately Jacob Markstrom wants to stay in Vancouver,
yes.
But here's the thing too. The goalie market this year is going to be flooded. The goalies in general do not have a ton of leverage. The only guy that might have leverage is the guy that ends up being the cream of the crop, kind of like you saw with Bobrovsky, and nobody is getting that big Bobrovsky contract this season. But who's going to be the guy the market views as the best goalie? And if it's not Jacob Markstrom, all of a sudden the big contract he wants outside of Vancouver may not be available. So Vancouver does have the leverage as far as it's a flooded market. There's other possibilities. There's probably not going to be a situation where Markstrom's going to get that, say, $6 million per year over 5 years to 6 years type of offer. I don't think that's going to be on the table for him. But if he's out the rest of the season here, and not saying he is, he may very well come back. It all comes down to how serious he feels it is. But it does kind of put him in a situation that if the Canucks come circling back contract talk-wise, would he be more willing to sign?
The broader conversation as well has to do with, okay, how many teams are actually in need of a goaltender this offseason? And among those teams, are there any that view the goaltending position as one that you can pay a high dollar value to, can commit a high cap hit to? Because we're existing in an era now where teams look at how they do their asset management, and take, for example, what Columbus has done this year.
Or Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trading high-end draft picks for contract certainty to help them down the road with, you know, Vasilevskiy is going to get a huge pay raise. Braden Point, Kucherov, all these, they have to figure this out at some point. They're paying for absolute cheap deals that they find valuable enough that, hey, they can go out and keep Sorelli and all these players that they are going to have to figure out at some point. And you're right, Columbus Blue Jackets, they're paying just a hair over $3 million to get fairly strong goaltending because they've bolstered the rest of the skaters in front of them, and they play a certain system with John Tortorella that allows them to do that.
Well, I thought Alex Aul made a really good point when it came back to the Jacob Markstrom conversation. It's one thing to say, okay, my time has come. I need to get my contract. I need to get my term, and let's go to market. The last thing you want is to be a guy standing around looking when all the jobs are gone.
Yeah.
The last thing you want, because you overplayed your leverage. I've said all along, and who knows, I've said all along, I think he stays. I think he wants to be here. I think the Canucks want to have him here. And I think there is a meeting point somewhere here in the middle that is reasonable. Wait and see, and we'll see how this factors in all of a sudden. Yeah. It's a fascinating development with the Vancouver Canucks, and we're waiting to hear from Jim Benning. We were led to believe at the top of the hour it was going to be just after noon that he got to the podium, but as this story develops, perhaps he's awaiting more information out of Montreal to do with an MRI and where Markstrom is at. Who knows? We'll wait and see. General manager of the Vancouver Canucks, as soon as he at the podium, you will get more here.
On Jacob Markstrom, I do think there is a meeting point. I think there's a four-year deal to be made in that $5-5.5 million range. And even a three-year deal, if you want to push it a little bit above that, I think you can get it done. The last offer that Canucks made on Earth, kind of mentioned this too, it wasn't going to get it done. So it really comes down to, when do the Canucks put their best offer on the table? They haven't done that yet, and they may wait until the after the season to do so. But all of a sudden, having Jacob Markstrom out right now, I think puts everything that was already on hold, even further on hold, to see how long he's going to be out. But I do hope that there is a discussion with Markstrom to give him a sense of security that, hey, we're going to give you a different offer too. Like, we are going to talk to you more, because the last thing you want him to do is feel like, hey, I don't know if these guys want me back. Should I go out and risk my knee anymore? How willing should I be to play the rest of the season if you guys don't value me to give me that extension that I'm looking for, at least close to what I'm looking for? So as much as the Canucks have said they've tabled discussions with Markstrom, considering what he's going through, I think it's important that they have a discussion about where things are standing to right now.
Don't have any information yet, but there are sources out of Montreal indicating that there are still Canadiens deals that are going to be announced here, so we'll see which teams those are with. Anaheim tweeted from its own account 6 minutes ago, more to come, with the eyeball emoji as well. So there are some deals that are going to come down. I'm not saying those two teams are making one together, but hey, we could see a Canucks deal filter down here at the last moment. You just never know.
And the fact that we haven't heard from Jim Benning yet and he hasn't met with the media means there's still things that have to get worked out. It could be deals on the trade call, because the Louis Domingue deal still has to probably go through the trade call as well. So whether it's that, anything else happening, or simply trying to get all their ducks in a row before he comments on Jacob Markstrom as well.
So if we have all the information, that's a big if right now. Canucks still could be in on something. But if we have all the information, any problem with the Canucks not bolstering their forward depth in terms of quote-unquote toughness that some have thought they needed to go out and get, or their back end with a depth defense? And do we have any problem with that whatsoever?
No, I mean, we talked before the Toffoli deal, and it felt like, literally the day before the Toffoli deal, it felt like standing pat was probably the most prudent approach. Now, they go make that trade, and it was, the term I was trying to use on that Tuesday, it's responsibly aggressive, right? You didn't give up Hoglander, you pulled Colson, or a first-round pick, and so you traded what was there, but to replace some pieces to, you know, Besser being out. So it's, again, it was responsibly aggressive to me. Today felt that same nature. It was responsible today. Louis Domingue, it's fine. It's a goalie-for-goalie trade at the AHL level. They still followed a certain approach. They didn't go down the irresponsibly aggressive road with something like Tyson Barrie last night.
What about you, Sat? Do you think this will come back to bite them whatsoever as far as not adding some defensive depth, or a little more up front as far as pushback or truculence goes?
The truculence pushback stuff, no. I mean, I think they're fine in that regard. If anything, the team has really tried to stand up for each other a lot more the past couple of weeks. We've pretty much seen a fight in every game the past six or seven games, it seems like. And, you know, what else they kind of worked on too, I didn't want to see them give up any more draft picks for rentals or be in situations like that. So that's kind of where I was at about adding depth players. I would have liked to seen them improve the defense. But again, like, if you're not making a bigger deal that's more bold, like, I would have been down for, hey, if you want to make something bold happen, go make something bold happen. Go get Jonas Brodin. If you're going to give up something significant, go ahead and do it for a guy like that that's beyond this season, is still young and fits in. I would have been fine with doing that.
I'm sorry, those deals are not easy to make. Team like that need to add a guy like that?
Yeah,
is that what
like
you're
that.
Suggesting?
Kind of, yeah. A team like that, a guy like that. That's kind of what I'm suggesting for the Canucks. But if you're not going to be able to make those deals, stand pat for the rest. You don't need to go out there and spend assets to bring a guy in who's going to be like Jordy Benn, for instance. Do you need to go spend an asset to bring a guy in that's going to be like Tyler Motte on the fourth line? I don't think you need to do that.
Eric Gustafson, that trade to Calgary, Eric Francis are reporting the return for the Blackhawks is a third-round pick to add Eric Gustafson in Calgary. They added two defensemen. They got Derek Forbort today as well out of the LA Kings. I believe that was a fourth-round pick. So the Flames spending some middle-round currency to bolster their blue line within the division.
It makes sense considering that they've had some injury issues as well, Giordano. But you know that's a team that needs to play better defensively.
That's a team that needs to score, though.
No, absolutely.
They really
but,
do.
But we had that same conversation with Vancouver. It wasn't necessarily that the Canucks can't score. It's, you know, to have sustained offense, you need to start winning the defensive game, too. And that's something the Leafs really struggle at. But the Flames, to me, as a whole, not even just defensively, their own back six defenders. Like, as a team, they need to defend better. It's way too much reliance on Backlund and Frolik. At one point was a really good defensive winger. Of course, he goes out. Tkachuk, you know, meets a baseline, is pretty good. But after that, like Monahan, Goudreau, all these guys aren't really strong defensive players.
I do find it interesting that Calgary, in looking at what it needed or felt it might need to add here at the deadline, maybe tried to accomplish it with the same position, that they wanted to bolster the back end a little bit given their injuries, and they wanted to add a little bit of scoring so they get Gustafson, who should be able to help that and amp that up a little bit from the back end.
Well, and you do get credible NHL defensemen. Forbort is a credible depth defenseman. Eric Gustafson is a legitimate top five defenseman in the league, and in the right role provides you some offense. But to Bick's point, he doesn't cover up those defensive issues they've had. But you do get depth for a puck-moving defenseman. And more than anything, it tells your locker room that, hey, we're not completely punting on this year. We're not selling. We're not standing pat. We're doing something to give you guys a little bit of a boost.
Is there enough of offensive upside to his game to cover up the defensive issues, though? That's what I...
What comes down to his role on the power play as well? How does that fit in? And, you know, that scoring from the back end for Calgary hasn't been where it needs to be either. We talk about, hey, they have puck-moving defensemen, but how many of them are having good seasons point-wise?
I have that same question for, like, Andreas Athanasiou, right? Great offensive upside, 30 goal scorer, obviously, but are you going to outweigh that by what you bring defensively? And so much of what happens in April and May in playoff hockey is sound structural play. If you start breaking that, that's when teams are going to pounce on you. And over the course of seven games, if it goes seven, teams know how to capitalize on those moments.
Sounds like trade registry is fairly backed up. So it's going to take a little while for these deals to trickle in and get details on some of them.
Yeah,
in
and they have to get finalized, too, before our GMs come out and talk on things. I mean, you're not going to hear Jim Benning come out and talk about a trade until it's been officially finalized, whether it's just the Domingue one or anything else that's in the hopper.
Very true. Very true indeed. We await Jim Benning. Where are you at as a Canucks fan with what the Canucks have done today? I thought this one was funny. Brian in Abbey says, what were the Canucks thinking? Is David Ayres still available after what he did to the Leafs on Saturday night? Hey, I know we've been talking mostly trades today, and that's what this day is all about. But while we have a couple minutes and we wait for Jim Benning, what a great story. What a story over the weekend. And I can only imagine how infuriating it would be if you were a Leafs fan.
Oh, I mean, I think Leafs Nation is now furious about a couple of things. One, losing to their own emergency goalie, that's a Zamboni driver, and the practice goalie, 42-year-old David Ayers, and also not moving Tyson Barrie. I think a lot of fans had hoped that they would be able to move Tyson Barrie to get something in return or perhaps change the mix on that blue line. That did not happen. So now Leafs fans have two things to be upset about, because Tyson Barrie is somebody right now in Toronto that's probably the least liked. Like, he's the whipping boy. Like, Tyson Barrie is the whipping boy, and at this point, I think a lot of fans just wanted him out of the building. Just, you know, addition by subtraction is kind of how they view Tyson Barrie. And not only did he not get moved, you also didn't improve your – you really didn't improve your blue line either.
He's the new Jake Gardiner, basically?
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's a tough role to be the offensive D-man that obviously, you know, has defensive issues and a – huge market like Toronto, but you know, just going back to the David Ayers thing, that's as rare as a moment we'll see in hockey, right? It's
he was every man. He was each of us.
He was
that's what he was.
And
Anybody who's ever had a dream of stepping into a professional sports arena, whatever sport you played, that was David Ayers.
They scored on him, but they also were kind of rooting for him. You saw in the exchange that they all kind of just stick-tapped him. Everyone was kind of pulling for him at some point.
Doesn't sound like we're close to Jim Benning hitting the podium, so we likely will end Canuck Central there. I did want to throw one last thing in. We mentioned the third rounder that Calgary sends to Chicago in order to get Erik Gustafsson. They can get a third rounder back if a couple of things happen here. And one of them seemingly should happen if James Neal can get back in the lineup. He scores two more goals, and as long as he's more than 10 goals ahead of Milan Lucic, they get a third round pick from Edmonton as a part of that deal. So Brad Treliving kind of spending a pick he felt he probably had already, that he had an extra one, and he goes out and gets that defensive help as well. I know you guys are going to be kicking around a whole lot more on the program this afternoon. Bick, you'll be producing a sat. You'll be on that program as well, and Andrew Walker will make his way in here.
Yeah, and Jim Benning will join the guys later today at 5 o'clock.
Excellent. So if there's anything you don't hear from Jim Benning, any questions you want answered that don't get answered at the press conference at Rogers Arena, they will get it out of Jim Benning later on this afternoon. That press conference and Reach Deep coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's your home of Canucks hockey, home of hockey in the Vancouver market, Sportsnet 650.